Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 48, which is entitled, Krishna Pleases His Devotees. Thank you. And I have been assigned 6 verses, some which have purports and some don't. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We'll do the text 2 responsively. Maharho Pashkarer Adyam. Kamo Payo Pabrimhitam. Mukta Dhamma Patakabir. Vitana Sayana Shanai Dupai Sura Bibir Dipai Shragander Apimanditam Maharho Pashkarer Daadyam Kamo Payo Pabrimhitam Mukta Dhamma Patakabir Vitana Shayana Shanai Dupai Surabi Bir Dipai Shragander Apimanditam. Please chant. Maskarayadyam. Kamo Payo Pabrimhitam. Vitana Shayana Sanai. Dupai Surabi Bir Dipai Shagande Rati Mandita Maharo Pashkare Adyam Maharo Pashkare Adyam Dupai Surabi Bir Dipai Shrakande Apimanditam Paskarar Adyam Kamo Payal Pabrimhitam Mukta Dhamma Patakabir Vitana Shayana Shanai Dupai Surabi Bir Dupai Shrakanda Apimandita. Ladies? Vaishnava? Maharapashkaradyam Kamo Payo Pabrimhitam Mukta Dhamma Patakabir Vitana Shayana Sanai Dupai Surabi Bir Dipai Shrakande Apimanditam. synonyms, maha, ahar. Expensive. Upaskarai. With furnishings. Adyam. Rich. Kama. Of lust. Upaya. With accoutrements. Upabrimhitam. Replete. Mukta Dhamma. With strings of pearls. Patakabi. And banners. Vitana. With canopies. Shayana. Beds. Ashanai. And seats. Dupai. With incense. Sarabibi. Fragrant. Dipai. With oil lamps. Shruk. With flower garlands. Gandai. And aromatic sandalwood paste. Api. Also. Manditam. Decorated. Translation. Trivikra's home was opulently appointed with expensive furnishings and replete with sensual accoutrements meant to inspire sexual desire. There were banners, rows of strung pearls, canopies, fine beds, and sitting places, and also fragrant incense, oil lamps, flower garlands, and aromatic sandalwood paste. Please repeat. The Trivikra's home was opulently appointed with expensive furnishings and replete with sensual accoutrements meant to inspire sexual desire. There were banners, rows of strung pearls, canopies, fine beds, and sitting places. And also fragrant incense, oil lamps, flower garlands, and aromatic sandalwood paste. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, the sensual accoutrements in Trivikra's house included explicit sexual pictures. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that her paraphernalia included herbal aphrodisiacs. It is not hard to guess Trivikra's intention, yet Lord Krishna went there to save her from material existence. So we'll continue the next five verses we can chant together, but just to say that each of these verses has a different meter and different length, so hopefully we can do it smoothly. Griham tam ayantam aveksya sasanat sadya samuthaya hi jata sambrama yato pasanganya shakir virachutam shabajayam asha sad ashana divi. When Trivikra saw him arriving at her house, she at once rose from her seat in a flurry. Coming forward graciously with her girlfriends, she respectfully greeted Lord Achyuta by offering him an excellent seat and other articles of worship. Text 4. Tato dava sadhu pijoto yasidad urvadyam. Krishna Piturnam Shayanam Mahadanam Visheshaloka Charitanya Nupata. Uddhava also received a seat of honor, since he was a saintly person, but he simply touched it and sat on the floor. Then Lord Krishna, imitating the manners of human society, quickly made himself comfortable on an opulent bed. Purport. According to the Acharyas, Uddhava felt reverence for his Lord and thus declined to sit on an opulent seat in his presence. Rather, he touched the seat with his hand and sat on the floor. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that Lord Krishna made himself comfortable on a bed located in the inner chambers of Trivikra's home. Text 5. Samajjana lepatu kula bhushana shaganda tambula sadasavati prasadita opasana madhavan savita glopok savita vipram sitai. Trivikra prepared herself by bathing, anointing her body, and dressing in fine garments, by putting on jewelry, garlands, and perfume, and also by chewing betel nut, drinking fragrant liquor, and so on. She then approached Lord Madhava with shy, playful smiles and coquettish glances. Purport. It is clear from this verse that the ways a woman prepares for sexual enjoyment have not changed in thousands of years. Text 6. Ahuya kantam navasangamahya vishankitam sakankanat pushite kare prakrasayam adi visheshanamaya reme nule parpana punya leshaya. Calling forward his beloved, who was anxious and shy at the prospect of this new contact, the Lord pulled her by her bangled hands onto the bed. Thus he enjoyed with that beautiful girl, whose only trace of piety was her having offered ointment to the Lord. Purport. Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti explains that the words Navasangamahriya indicate that Trivikra was, in fact, a virgin girl at this point. She had been a deformed hunchback, and the Lord had recently transformed her into a beautiful girl. Therefore, although clearly lusting after Sri Krishna, she was naturally shy and anxious. Okay, verse 7. This is the one that I would chant as the Govindam prayers, that meter. Translation. Simply by smelling the fragrance of Krishna's lotus feet, Trivikra cleansed away the burning lust Cupid had aroused in her breast, chest, and eyes. With her two arms, she embraced between her breasts her lover, Sri Krishna, the personification of bliss, and thus she gave up her long-standing distress. Krishna. So we're reading about Trivikra, who in the Krishna book was always called by her other name, which is Kubja. And I personally prefer that name because it's like I met her by that name. Both names actually mean that she's a hunchback. Kubja literally means hunchback, and Trivikra means bent in three places. So either way, she is named by her form. So the beginning of this story, we need to go back to chapter 41 of this canto, when Krishna entered Mathura to participate in the wrestling match. So Akura had come to collect Krishna and Balaram and transport them to Mathura, and when there's this wonderful description, especially in the Krishna book, of the ladies and the girls of Mathura who wanted to see Krishna and Balaram. They had heard about him, they had never seen him, and they were just so excited and enthusiastic to see them that they ran to the roofs of their homes, and some of them were half-dressed. They had taken some part of their clothing and put it on a different part. Some of them had put on one earring or one ankle bell or half their makeup. Some of them just left their children nursing, just left them behind and ran up to the roof and, you know, watched Krishna and Balaram entering Mathura. And so Krishna was walking very slowly, and he was smiling, and he was looking at everyone. And it's described how he stole these ladies' hearts. And their joy had reached the point of ecstasy. They were so enthusiastic and happy to see Krishna and Balaram, and they took Krishna and Balaram within their hearts. And it's described how they began to embrace them to their fullest desire. And then Krishna and Balaram walked through the streets of Mathura, and they talked to three people. First a washerman, then a florist, and then Kubja. So with the washerman, Krishna actually was asking for the clothing, which he understood wasn't there for him, it was meant for the king. But he was telling the washerman that if he did give him the clothing, that he would become very happy, and that he would get all fortune, all good fortune would be his. And yet the washerman was arrogant and wouldn't give the clothes, and pretty much chastised Lord Krishna for even asking for the clothing. But Krishna was indicating that, you know, anyone who is ready to offer service to him is going to get all benediction. And it's understood that the washerman couldn't serve because of bad association, because he was the servant of the king. And so he couldn't appreciate what Krishna was asking him and what Krishna was offering him. And so Krishna, just with his hand, not even with a weapon, he was able to just chop off the head of the washerman, because he could do anything with any part of his body, anything. And he did that. So then he approached a florist whose name was Sudama. And this florist was a devotee. And he was so happy to see Lord Krishna. And he was, he had just such great devotion. And he served Krishna and Balaram so nicely. And he offered many prayers. And Krishna, therefore, offered him all benedictions. And he fulfilled all the prayers, like he was praying to become his eternal servant, and, you know, he wanted to do good to all living entities, so Krishna fulfilled those desires. And he also gave him material opulence, family prosperity, long life, and whatever his heart desired. So then, after leaving the florist place, then Krishna and Balaram saw this hunchback young woman. And she was carrying a dish of ointments through the streets. So since Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, he decided that he would make a joke with his friends, because he was with Balaram and some of his friends. And the joke that he said to the hunchback woman went like this. He said, "Oh, tall young woman, who are you? Tell me for whom you are carrying this sandalwood pulp in your hand. I think you should offer this sandalwood pulp to me. And if you do so, I am sure you will be fortunate." This is how Srila Prabhupada translated this in the Krishna book. And I just want to point out that he used the word fortunate, because tomorrow's verse, it says that actually Trivika was unfortunate. But in this, she was both. She was both fortunate and unfortunate. So here Krishna is saying, you know, if you do what I say, if you serve me, you will be fortunate. And he was joking with her, but at the same time, Krishna knew what he was going to do and that she would be a tall young woman. But at that moment, she wasn't, so this is a joke. And so then the hunchback woman said to Krishna, "My dear Shyamasundara, Dear beautiful dark boy, you may know that I am engaged as a maidservant of Kamsa. I am supplying him pulp of sandalwood daily. The king is very much pleased with me for supplying this nice thing. But now I see that there is no one who can be better served by this pulp of sandalwood than you two brothers. So she was very captivated by Krishna and Balaram, and she began to smear the pulp of sandalwood all over their bodies with great satisfaction and devotion. Now, this is, I'm quoting from the Krishna book, but I just want to say that in the translation of the 10th canto, it's described that this was more like ointment. They don't say it was sandalwood, it was ointment with different colors in it. And in the purport, it says that most likely that it was yellow colored. Well, of course, sandalwood is yellow. But it was yellow on Krishna, because it said it was contrasting colors. So it was yellow on Krishna and blue on Balaram. So going on with, see, Prabhupada sometimes expands, even though it's a summary, Krishna book is a summary study, many times he expands on the verses. And in this particular pastime, he did that. So then he says, the two transcendental brothers, Krishna and Balaram, were naturally beautiful and had beautiful complexions, and they were nicely dressed in colorful garments. The upper portions of their bodies were already very attractive, and when the hunchbacked woman smeared their bodies with sandalwood pulp, they looked even more beautiful. Krishna was very much pleased by this service, and he began to consider how to reward her. In other words, in order to draw the attention of the Lord, the Krishna-conscious devotee has to serve him in great love and devotion. Krishna cannot be pleased by any action other than transcendental loving service unto him. Thinking like this, Lord Krishna pressed the feet of the hunchback woman with his toes, and capturing her cheeks with his fingers, gave her a jerk in order to make her straight. So this is a most amazing feat. It's like Krishna was the original transcendental chiropractor. And, or maybe it's cranial sacral. I don't know what it's called, but Krishna was amazing. And it says, at once, the hunchback woman became a beautiful straight girl with broad hips, thin waist, and very nice, well-shaped breasts. Since Krishna was pleased with the service of the hunchback woman, and since she was touched by Krishna's hands, she became the most beautiful girl among women. This incident shows that by serving Krishna, the devotee immediately becomes elevated to the most exalted position in all respects. Devotional service is so potent that anyone who takes to it becomes qualified with all godly qualities. Krishna was attracted to the hunchback woman, not for her beauty, but for her service. As soon as she rendered service, she immediately became the most beautiful woman. A Krishna-conscious person does not have to become qualified or beautiful. After becoming Krishna-conscious and rendering service unto Krishna, he becomes very much qualified and beautiful. So then the story goes on how she felt so obliged to Krishna, and she was so attracted to his beauty that Kripja grabbed a hold of Krishna's cloth and began to pull on it. And it says she smiled flirtatiously and admitted that she was agitated by lusty desires. And she forgot that she was there on the street with the elder brother of Krishna and his friends. But despite the fact that she was, you know, there was other people there, she just directly said to Krishna, "My dear hero, I cannot leave you in this way. You must come to my place. I am already very much attracted by your beauty, to your beauty. So I must receive you well. And since you are the best among males, you must also be very kind to me. So in plain words, she proposed that Krishna come to her house and satisfy her lusty desires. Krishna felt a little embarrassed just because of his elder brother being there. But he smiled at the girl. Then he, as he was looking towards his cowherd boyfriends, he said, "My dear, beautiful girl, I'm very much pleased by your invitation, and I must come to your home after finishing my other business here. Such a beautiful girl as you is the only means of solace for persons like us who are away from home and not married. Certainly, a suitable girlfriend like you can give us relief from all kinds of mental agitation." So after saying these sweet words to Kupcha, to Charaka, he left her there and he proceeded on his way. So the amazing thing is that he did what he, not that it's amazing, but sometimes Krishna has been known to seemingly not do what he said he's going to do, although he always does. But we're now later in the story, and Krishna has now come to her house. And so let's go back to these verses. So the verses that we read today are describing Tribhuka's house and all the different details of the decorations in her house and the smells from incense and garlands and so on. And it's described how there was all the decorations and so on were for enjoyment. And how it's described in the verses how Tribhuka was surrounded by her girlfriends in the house, and how she nicely received the Lord when he arrived and offered him many different articles. Then it's described how Uddhava was offered a seat, but he didn't feel, out of respect, he could not sit on a seat, a raised seat, in the presence of the Lord. And so he sat on the floor. It's interesting how it's described how he touched the seat with his hand, but then he sat on the floor. And then it's described how Lord Krishna sat on a bed, and it's described how that bed was in the inner chambers of her home, well, in the purport. That is described from Vishwanath Chakravarti. And I don't know if I can comment on the purport to text 6 about... It is an interesting purport, but one that says, "It is clear from this verse that the ways a woman prepares for sexual enjoyment have not changed in thousands of years." It did bring to mind how would they know. But anyway, I don't think that in all the details that are described in that verse, I don't think these things go on these days of garlands and betel nuts. I mean, certain things are from the Vedic tradition and are not going on today. But in any case, then it's described how Tribhuka was very shy. And, she was seemingly nervous, it's described. And in the purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti is quoted as saying that Tribhuka was actually a virgin girl. So it's just interesting because in the Krishna book, she's described as a society girl, and how society girls were known for having relations with men in exchange for money. And yet, well, it sort of makes sense to me because as a hunchback, she wouldn't have been very attractive, and therefore no one would have been interested in enjoying with her. But this is an interesting description, nevertheless, of how she was so shy and giving you know, coquettish glances and so many descriptions like that. And then in text 7, how by just smelling the fragrance of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, how the lust that she was experiencing in her heart was satisfied, and how she took Lord Krishna's lotus feet and put them on her breast, and how she was completely satisfied. Well, it's described how she gave up her long-standing distress. So one can understand that in her life up to that point, she had been in distress, suffering from lust. And Krishna, this pastime was simply to benedict her by taking away that lust, because it really is a burning in the heart. So Ukubja or Kripika was so grateful to Lord Krishna, and I just feel like she was, so that becoming fortunate idea, she was just so fortunate that Krishna came to her home. He did what he was, you know, he had promised. And I researched, you know, how did she get to be so fortunate? I mean, to have that experience of Krishna being her lover, that pretty much was reserved for the gopis and for Krishna's wives. And yet she had that relationship. So it says in the Garga Samhita that, do you remember the sister of Ravana named Sarpanak, who had approached Lord Ram when he was in the forest, and she was in the disguise of a beautiful woman. And she approached Ram and demanded that he marry her. But the Lord Ram refused because he had taken a vow to have only one wife. And then he suggested that she marry his brother, Lakshman, who was unmarried. So then she switched her focus onto him, and he shied away, and he pretty much said, no, you don't settle for me. You should accept my brother, Lord Ram. Anyway, she realized that she was being messed around, and she realized that Sita was in the way, so then she attempted to attack Sita, at which point Lakshman took out his sword and cut off her nose and her ears. And so she was left unsatisfied with this desire. So at the end of, well, I'm not sure when in her life, but at some point in her life, she went to Pushkar Tirtha, and for 10,000 years, it's described in the Garga Samhita, she meditated under the water. She meditated on Lord Shiva, and her prayer was that she was asking for a benediction to grant her Lord Ram as her husband. So finally, after 10,000 years, Lord Shiva appeared to her, and he said, no, I cannot grant this particular boon. But in the future, at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, your desire will be fulfilled. And so then Narada Muni explained that she became Kubja so that she could have that experience of Lord Krishna in the conjugal relationship. So let's see. I actually meant to bring my Kindle, but I didn't, so. So, I was writing here about Cupid and how, you know, Trivikra was affected, you know, by the arrows of Cupid, and how, and at first I was thinking, how is it they're using this word Cupid? Because it seemed like a modern Western word. And I looked it up in the dictionary online, and it's a Latin word. There's a god of love called Cupid in the Roman times. The Greeks called him Eros. And Cupid is usually described as a winged young boy who carries a bow and arrow. And so I didn't understand that Cupid was actually also a word from the Vedas. So in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada described that he's talking about the word klim in the Gayatri Mantra and how it's the seed of love of God, or the seed word of the Kama Gayatri Mantra. And then Prabhupada writes, the object is Krishna, who is the evergreen Cupid. And by utterance of klim, Krishna is worshipped. It is also stated in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad that when Krishna is spoken of as Cupid, one should not think of him as the Cupid of this material world. So there's the explanation. There is a Cupid in the material world. But then he says, as already explained, Vrindavan is the spiritual abode of Krishna, and thus the word Cupid is also spiritual and transcendental when applied to Krishna. One should not take the material Cupid and Krishna to be on the same level. The material Cupid increases the attraction of the external flesh and body, but the spiritual Cupid increases the attraction the supersoul exerts upon the individual soul. So, and then in that TLC, Prabhupada quotes a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:32-2. Tasham avira bukchori smayamana mukambuja pitambara dara shragvi shakshan man mataman mataha. He's stating that the Lord appeared before the damsels of Braja, smiling and playing on his flute. He appeared just like Cupid. So my understanding from this verse is that there's a very big difference between material lust and spiritual love. And Srila Prabhupada, in pretty much every verse that he translates, he's always offering us the opportunity to perfect our lives by taking up Krishna consciousness enthusiastically. And considering that he started his temples just to give us a chance to create communities and inspire and assist each other in our Krishna consciousness. So in this community, which is the largest community in North America, I feel we are obliged to do something wonderful. Prabhupada especially expected that from his American disciples. He said that more than one occasion, as far as I know, asking us to do something extraordinary. And I feel that as a community, we should be brainstorming ways to do something extraordinary. And I feel that there should be conversations in this community to encourage each other. Like, what is it you would love to do if you had, like, this is a concept. Let's say you had all the time in the world and you didn't have to worry about supporting yourself, but you had all the money you needed, and you just were free to do something for Prabhupada. Like, what is it, that thing that you would like to do? And then share it with other devotees, what it is you come up with. And let's put it, make an action plan and put it into action. Let's do that. Anyway, that's the way I see it. that's the, you know, one of the benefits of a large community. And thank you very much for listening, and open it up to questions and comments. And okay, Trivikram Prabhu, you had your hand up first, and then Mahananda Prabhu.
I've been here, I don't know if I've not been hearing clearly, but I think the word is Trivikra.
Long A at the end.
It's different, yeah. So it seems one of the verses says the Lord enjoyed the Torah. But like what I've read previously and stuff is, I mean, it, you know, it's kind of indicating intimacy, you know, but it, from what I've understood before, it's not that, I mean,
you know, not clearly said. It's not clearly, you know, but yet and, one would indicate, it would seem that way.
Yeah. One other thing. Yeah, the Cupid of this world is called Kandarpa. Uh-huh. Kandarpa, you know, he is the god of love.
I see.
Yeah, and the rest of it is called.
Okay, thank you. Mahananda, I think. He had his hand up next.
I was just thinking what you were talking about at the end, your idea of everyone coming together and having ideas that if they had all the time in the world, if they had nothing else to do, what they would do for Srila Prabhupada. And it reminded me of a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's one verse, I think it's called the Python verse. It talks about the python just lies in the road, and he doesn't make any effort. He just lies there, and everything comes to him. And in that purport, Prabhupada, he makes this statement. He says, the devotees, and I quote, I might be off one word, the devotees should not work at all for the maintenance of their material body. They should spend 100% of their time in spreading Krishna consciousness.
Wow. So, okay.
Now,
wonderful.
Well, people may say, oh, that's so impossible. But when I joined back in 69, it wasn't impossible. It's exactly what we did. Right. Nobody had any other thought in their mind to go to work or to struggle. All you thought about all day was how you can serve Prabhupada, what you can do. We were always just trying to think what project we could come up with, how we could do this, how we could go to Africa and do this for Prabhupada. We were always writing to Prabhupada, asking him what to do. And so that verse, that purport is not so outlandish. It is in relationship to the present reality.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, yeah, right. But yeah. In the context of when Prabhupada was here and we were all together, it made perfect sense.
So yeah.
I was reminded of that verse when you said that.
Okay, thank you for sharing it. I didn't join in 69, but shortly thereafter. And I just remember running from one service to the next. And we were all so happy. People joined the movement because we were so happy. They wanted to be happy like us. Vaishnavananda Prabhu.
So he's already said what I wanted to say. And it's a very unique question.
Close enough. Okay.
So Mahananda Prabhu has already stated my very same thought. You know, the devotees, like the old days, you know, we all just went out and book distribution. And really, I don't see that here. I mean, I see it vaguely. He's not here now, but
Vibhyananda,
we used to go to the airport with him. But the devotees basically going out, disseminating Krishna consciousness, getting in the vans. I've always had this, oh, this thought of, you know, Alachua having 4, 5, 6, 7 vans of, you know, saying, you know, Dala Shematunda TSAP, devotees going out and engaging, like the old days, of spreading Krishna consciousness, and that would truly bring a monumental change to the community.
You want to be the Sankirtan leader?
Well, I'm actually doing
it. Your idea?
In Dominican Republic. I can go out and pass out on chant in Spanish. And people, it's truly sweet. Everyone stops to talk to you there.
Okay.
And, I've been assigned the acting temple president there. And it's a great service because I can share with the devotees, share. I'm not thinking position, any clout, anything like that, just to go out and book distribution. It's truly, really amazing going out and talking to the people. I mean, it would bring such a great change to the community. But I'm sure we all know that, and I also know that some devotees are doing that. But I wanted to ask you if you would also elaborate on the Vaishnav Sarachar that Uddhava exercised. Actually, in the Bhagavatam, it stated when Maitreya was in the venue, was in the vicinity, that he would not comment. He was asked to speak that he would, although Srila Prabhupada also conveys clearly that Uddhava is so much more of an advanced, elevated soul than Maitreya Rishi. And I wanted to, I know, well, if I may say, with all due respect, that many, many God brothers I talk to are always disgruntled in some way and complaining about not, you know, getting no respect, kind of thing, you know. And so the Vaishnava Sarachar that Prabhupada also, you know, clearly pointed out to us. And I've heard the story of Srila Prabhupada telling one devotee on Second Avenue. You know, and I had the fortune of going to Second Avenue. Prabhupada wasn't there when I went. 67, my misfortune. But Srila Prabhupada told one particular devotee, why are you sitting there? He's senior to you. You probably know the story. So, well, exactly. But in the old days, it was always, you know, senior God brother thing, and I was training that way, the Sarachar, Vaishnava Sarachar, you know, like if you get an old fart here, and I'm 64 years old, and Mahananda is, you know, also in that generation, how I personally, you know, will not speak before senior devotee. Like, I mean, I wait, you know, I don't want to be first. I look around and see, Sesha Prabhu's here, Mahananda's here. So I truly exercise that Sarachar. I try to anyway. So would you elaborate on how Vaishnava Sarachar would also enhance the beauty of this community? You know, just due respect. I mean, even though, you know, Triyarapi, Sunichena, Thorarapi, Sahishuna, we should not truly expect it and anticipate any type of glorification, you know, profit, adoration, distinction. But somehow we're not completely pure. And this, what's the word, the pratishtha, you know, it's there. I can't really do away with it. So would you just...
Well, I think you said quite, you know, covered the topic, but I was thinking, I'm pretty sure it's Prabhupada who said not to demand respect, but to command respect. But, Vaishnava etiquette, I always think of the time in New Vrindavan, 1972, when Prabhupada was there for the Bhagavat Dharma discourses. And he held it just before Janmashtami, and then Vyasa Puja Day came, and Prabhupada was so upset with us not offering properly that he actually, what I remember is he left the stage that they had set up, and the old devotees were under the tent, and he left, and then devotees, you know, the big guns who went with Prabhupada said, what did we do wrong? And he was saying, I've taught you how to do Vyasa Puja properly, and you're not doing it right. And they're saying, well, please tell us exactly how to do it. And he gave the devotees another chance. And he came back. And his way of offering Vyasa Puja was that the oldest, most senior devotee, who was at that time Kirtananda, his Swami, that he would offer flowers to Prabhupada and pay full dandavats. And then a second time, he would offer flowers, dandavats. And a third time, flowers, dandavats. And then the next person came, the next most senior person. And he did the same thing. And this process took a while. It took a long time. And I think all the sannyasis got a chance to offer. And then started with the temple presidents. And then Prabhupada called Shalavati forward. Mother Shalavati was several years older than everybody else. She was probably around 40. And we were all, you know, teenagers or in our 20s. And so he had her come forward and offer flowers. So to me, she was like the token woman. She represented all the women. But when I think of this, pretty much every day at Guru Puja, because I'm thinking how, okay, once a day when we're offering flowers to Prabhupada, there should be Vaishnava etiquette, there should be the older devotees, the senior devotees should offer flowers first. It doesn't happen here. We haven't trained people to do that. So I guess the burden on us is to train people. I feel like, this is an educational movement. We educate people who don't chant Hare Krishna. We request them to, take up the process, but within our own movement, yeah. There's so much understanding and different levels of respect that we could and should be following.
It was very nicely said. And I appreciate you touched, your class has been really very explicit. You spoke about it. Mention everything sometimes. I think that would enhance the participation of the devotees, because look around. And I know there's many Prabhupada disciples in the community who are coming.
There are a lot who listen online, just so you know.
We'd like to see them here.
Of course, we'd like to see them here as well.
Thank you for your.
All right, thank you. I just want to add that, I said I forgot my Kindle, and now I remember why I wanted to bring my Kindle. Because there was more information about Kuja being, say, I can't remember it exactly, but she was the partial incarnation of Satyabhama. And it's earlier in the 10th canto, in the purports to the verses about the first part of the story when Kuja gave the ointment to and smeared it on Krishna. In those purports, she is Bhu Shakti. That's, I'm sorry. I'm just giving you a little bit of what I remember that I had read in that earlier purport. Okay, so there was a bunch more hands, but it's really getting late, so I have to wind this up.
She became Kashi Mishra in Gaur Lila.
Really? Thank you.
I just want to say, so that Prabhupada walked out of the room. He was about to walk out of the room. That's how Prabhupada
wanted the process to happen like that. One time when we had Prabhupada's disappearance day in the evening, Rupa Nuga was here. And Rupa Nuga says, no, this is improper. This is the way Prabhupada wants it done. The most senior man, he goes in the front of the line. Next senior. And Rupa Nuga was in the front. And I was actually the next man behind him. So I was certainly happy with that, we're human beings. We don't mind getting a little recognition once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so many years ago, and I still remember it.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, last one is Dharmaraj is holding. Oh, Keshavi.
One other thing I was thinking is we have so many senior people here. It would be a job to find out who is more senior than who.
We all know. At least, I think we all know, actually. Or more or less we know.
Just coming back to the discussion about, you know, what Mananda Prabhu started with in your class about having time on their hands, what they would do for Krishna.
Yeah.
I see that I want to like try to bridge a gap, that there is a narrow but very important difference between we looking to serve Krishna or we looking for Krishna to serve us. And the point I'm making is that if you wait, like what you're saying, if somebody has time on their hands, what they will do for Krishna. In other words, what the indication is, subtly, is that, okay, if Krishna served me by giving me all facilities so that I have my hands up in the air, then I would consider what I want to do to serve Krishna. You think you see the point there?
Yeah.
You know, so therefore, a devotee's whole life is to do service for Krishna, regardless of time, place, or circumstances, regardless of situations. And we have seen that in the history of our movement, that some devotees, like apparently, the more dedicated they become, is more difficult their material situation can become also. Like we have several months back with Mother Rakuti, I know she, like, as far as I know, is every breath of her day is towards serving the Lord. And then one day she went up, I think it was Jacksonville, she stayed in a motel, went out, came back, all her wallet was gone. Everything, all credit card, everything was gone. So then, you know, the thought came to me that, you know, that's all she has, just very little. And she's using every bit. So then, you know, the thought came that, well, okay, well, is it that, well, we should look, well, okay, now Krishna should serve me by protecting my assets, or should I continue serving Krishna unconditionally? So the point is to what you're bringing up as to, you know, what we can serve, who has facility. I'm seeing the other side, you know, like, okay, we should not look for facility, we should give our every breath in serving. I know in our own case with the festivals and what we're doing, when we started serving in these festivals, we had so much facilities. And as every year goes by, our energy is draining and draining and draining, until now it's such a struggle. But still, the services, we're getting more enthusiasm to serve more. So I just want to bring about, you know, the contrast of that as how a devotee should see their situation. And not waiting for Krishna to serve them, and then they will serve Krishna, if Krishna provides facilities.
Okay, thanks for making that distinction.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.